Okay, I'm going to go ahead and call this meeting to order at 5:32 p.m. Is there anyone that would like to address the board regarding the closed session items? Seeing none, we will adjourn to closed session. Thank you. Okay, thank you for your patience. I'm going to go ahead and call this meeting to order at 7:15. Okay. We can stand for the invocation. Ms. Poulos is going to lead us.
Dear Lord, please be with us this evening as we make the decisions that affect the students. We also ask to keep all the staff and the students safe during break and to help the students that are in the extended school year and summer school be able to learn, and we appreciate all the teachers that are putting in the effort, extra effort during the summer break. In his name we pray. Amen.
Please join me in the flag salute.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call, please.
Here.
Here.
Mrs. Bowles?
Here.
Okay, and our student has graduated. We are very excited for her. Okay, I'm going to go ahead, and the following action was taken in closed session on June 12th, 2012. It was moved by Mr. Mike Spence and seconded by Mr. Steve Cox and approved to expel the following pupils from the schools of the district. Student 192052, Education Code 48900, parentheses A1, parentheses K, caused, attempted to cause, or threatened to cause physical injury to another person and disruption. Four yeses, one absent. Student number 202083, Education Code 48900, C, J, and K, unlawfully possessed, used, sold, or otherwise furnished, or been under the influence of certain controlled substances, an alcoholic beverage, or an intoxicant of any kind, had unlawful possession of or unlawfully offered, arranged, or negotiated to sell any drug, paraphernalia, and disruption. Pupil 201145, Education Code 48900CK, unlawfully possessed, used, sold, or otherwise furnished or been under the influence of certain controlled substances, an alcoholic beverage, or an intoxicant of any kind, had unlawful possession of or unlawfully offered, arranged, or negotiated to sell any drug, paraphernalia, and disruption. And finally, pupil 179805, Education Code 48900C and K. Again, unlawfully possessed, used, sold, or otherwise furnished or been under the influence of certain controlled substances, an alcoholic beverage, or an intoxicant of any kind, had unlawful possession of or unlawfully offered, arranged, or negotiated to sell any drug, paraphernalia, and disruption. All three expulsions were a 4-1 vote, the one being absent. Okay, it was moved by Ms. Palos and seconded by Mr. Cox. The Board of Education approved the settlement of special education due process case hearing number 201202441. Settlement was approved to provide money for special education services and to avoid protracted litigation without any admission of district liability. It was four yes, one absent. Thank you. Okay, we have I'm sorry?
You got to say who it is.
I'm sorry. There was voting yes and four, and I'm told I need to say there was one absent. Ms. Shoemaker was absent. Okay, we will have a presentation. We are really happy to have the IB staff here with us, Mr. Travatori, and staff from the school to give us an update. I will turn this over to Ms. Kaplan.
Well, we're very excited because we're now moving into year three. And we are actually starting with our IB program, and so we thought it was a wonderful opportunity to bring the board up to date in terms of where we are with enrollment and with the program and the beginning of the new curriculum. So Mr. Trappatori and staff.
It's on here.
We like it. I'm going to do this.
It's light. It's really dark.
There you go. Board of Education, Cabinet, first and foremost, I would like to thank all of you for providing my team the opportunity to present this evening. At this juncture in the IB implementation process, we thought it prudent to provide all of you additional context and insight into some of the intricacies of the IB diploma program as you continue to review and also give consideration to our course outlines and curriculum. It is truly amazing how far we have gone since we first presented to this esteemed board back in the spring of 2009. At that time, we were considering many themes and configurations for the new Edgewood High School, including but not limited to the performing arts. A full 3 years later, we are thriving as a small learning community with 2 years behind us and a bright future before us with the IB diploma program as a central feature of the new high school. We've cleared a variety of hurdles to arrive where we are, from the initial certification to our full authorization status that we're currently enjoying. As you're well aware, a most critical phase is now before us, that being the approval of the intended curriculum. I must also point out and cannot emphasize enough that this journey has been a learning and growth experience for our entire faculty and staff. Our knowledge of the IB program has grown tremendously and will continue to evolve as we begin implementation in August. I'm sorry, that was the first line, actually. Distinguishing features of IB. The question invariably surfaces, what makes IB different than advanced placement? Simple. IB is a program and AP is not. With AP, students can take few or many courses, while with IB, students strive towards the goal of earning a diploma. So IB is a two-year program, 11th and 12th grade year. It encapsulates four semesters, and there's some work over the summer. We look at this hexagon model, which essentially is six different subject areas. Language A would be that primary language, depending on what part of the world you're in. In our case, it's English. Second language at Edgewood, we have a choice of either Mandarin or Spanish. We looked at more down the road. Individuals and societies is essentially history of the Americas. Experimental sciences, that can be biology, chemistry, and other sciences that do entail a lab component. Mathematics, and of course, there's an arts component as well. So that comprises the hexagon. Now, there's internal assessments throughout the year, and there's also external assessments. That's where it's similar to advanced placement. Advanced placement, if a child scores a 3, 4, or 5, they can get college credit. With IB, the goal is to achieve 27 points. So the assessment's 5, 6, or 7 is the score you're looking for. You add all that up. If you get 27, you get the diploma. Now, the beauty of IB is it's not all or nothing. If a student doesn't attain that magic number of 27, then they could walk with a certificate in the courses that they took that they scored a 5, 6, or 7, much like advanced placement. And, of course, their GPA is weighted along the way, just like with AP and honors courses as well. But the three central aspects that really comprise the core of the program, again, what makes it unique from AP, what you'll kind of see surfacing as you review the course outlines, are three major components. And that's theory of knowledge, creative action and service, and extended essay. And so I'd like to bring a couple folks up here to provide more detail into those, as they are essentially our experts, as they've received training in this regard. So first I'd like to introduce Mrs. Diane Starzinski, who is our theory of knowledge instructor.
Thank you, Mr. Trevatore. First of all, I am truly honored to have been selected to teach the theory of knowledge. I'm very, very excited about what theory of knowledge has to offer for our students. Along with CAS and the extended essay, theory of knowledge is essentially the glue that holds the International Baccalaureate program together. In addition to being a required element of the IB program, theory of knowledge strongly supports Edgewood High School's ESLRs. And so on both hands, we're supporting our school and our students through everything that we do. Theory of knowledge is a course that looks at the nature of knowledge across various fields or disciplines. It explores how it is we come to knowledge and how it's used in our everyday lives. Theory of knowledge is a course in critical thinking where students reflect on their learning. Theory of knowledge as students examined four different ways of knowing: language, reason, sense perception, and emotion. They then take those ways of knowing and apply them to the six areas of the curriculum: the history, mathematics, natural sciences, human sciences, and ethics, the five areas of knowledge, I'm sorry. And then, although theory of knowledge is not a credit-bearing class, IB requires that students do take a minimum of 100 hours of class time in theory of knowledge over a span of two semesters. Our students will begin the theory of knowledge class second semester of their junior year, which is year one of IB, and continue through the first semester of their senior year, or semester one of year four, of year two of IB. The reason we do it this way is so that the students can continually make connections between the six core subjects as students reflect on their experiences as learners throughout the diploma program. Theory of knowledge will help our students make connections between academic discipline, enabling them to better understand and question the complex texts that are studied with their IB courses. Much of theory of knowledge is structured as a Socratic dialogue. Questions will be explored, such as, where does knowledge come from? Is knowledge the same thing as truth? Does truth change over time? What's the difference between knowing something and understanding something? Is what we see influenced by what we believe to be true? These are just a few of many, many questions that will be explored over the two semesters. Unlike other disciplines, students in theory of knowledge are never told what to think. They only learn how to think. And this class gives students the necessary tools to be active, engaged, lifetime learners. Thank you. And I'd like to now call Jeannie Barong, who's going to talk about the CAS program.
Well, first of all, I'd like to say it's a privilege and an honor to serve both as the CAS coordinator and the IB coordinator next year at Edgewood High School. CAS is the heart of the diploma program, and along with TOK and the extended essay that you'll hear about next, it's an essential element in every student's diploma program experience. The acronym CAS stands for Creativity. 50 logged hours of arts and other experiences that involve creative thinking. Action: 50 logged hours of physical exertion that contributes to a healthy lifestyle, including high school athletics and performance teams. And service: 50 logged hours of unpaid voluntary service that has a learning benefit for the student. CAS was designed with the aim of providing a balance of activities during what is a very rigorous two-year course. It allows students to gain reflective skills. It allows them to understand their potential to make a difference in the community and world. And it enables them to learn that they can not only accept but achieve great challenges. All proposed CAS activities need to meet the following four criteria. One, real purposeful activities with significant outcomes. Two, personal challenges. Three, thoughtful considerations such as planning, reviewing progress, and reporting. And lastly, personal reflection on outcomes and what individuals have personally learned. CAS activities may not replicate other parts of the student's diploma program work, and they should continue on a regular basis for at least 16 months throughout the diploma program. Although not credit-bearing, successful completion of CAS is a requirement for the award of the IB diploma, and students in the school need to document their activities and provide evidence that they have achieved eight learning outcomes. The eight learning outcomes are as follows. Students must have increased their awareness of their own strengths and areas for growth. They must have undertaken new challenges. They must have planned and initiated activities. They must have worked collaboratively with others. They must have demonstrated perseverance and commitment in their activities. They must have engaged with issues of global importance. They must have considered the ethical implications of their actions. And lastly, they must have developed new skills in the process. All eight outcomes must be present for a student to complete the CAS requirement. However, some outcomes may be demonstrated many times in a variety of activities. Completion only requires that there's evidence for every outcome throughout the 16 to 18 months that they perform CAS. CAS is a perfect complement, moreover, to the EHS mission statement. Edgewood High School graduates will be prepared to take their place as productive and invested members of the larger world community with a commitment to service beyond self. In essence, CAS is service learning at its finest. And next, Assistant Principal Sonia Gonzalez will explain the extended essay.
Good evening, everyone. I'm just going to take a moment and actually go back a slide. Okay, so now about extended essay. The extended essay is an in-depth study of a focus topic chosen by the IB student from the list of approved diploma program subjects. And that is what you see in the hexagon right there. So language A or B, individuals and societies, environmental sciences, math, or the arts. The extended essay is intended to promote high-level research and writing skills, intellectual discovery and creativity. Also, it encourages students to develop the skills of independent research that will be expected at the university level. Students research a topic of their own choice over the course of the 2 years of the diploma program during the 11th and 12th grade years. This research is done under the guidance of a supervisor who is a teacher at Edgewood. Ultimately, this leads to a major piece of formally presented, structured writing, no more than 4,000 words, in which ideas and findings are communicated in a reasoned and coherent manner appropriate for the subject chosen. Each of the 6 IB course areas has a specific set of criteria appropriate for that course area. Once the written essay has been completed, there is a short, concluding interview, or as known by the IB organization, the Viva Voce, with their supervising teacher. And additional details about the extended essay, though not credit-bearing, this is compulsory for all DP students, diploma program students. It is externally assessed, and in combination with the grade for theory of knowledge, it contributes up to 3 points to the total score for the IB diploma. The extended essay represents approximately 40 hours of work by the student. Edgewood High School has selected Russell Burrows, our current media center technician, to oversee the extended essay process. I'm here in his place because he will be attending training in October of the coming school year. In conjunction with the new IB coordinator, as I'm passing the torch to IB coordinator Jeannie Barong, Mr. Burrows will ensure in order to ensure that the extended essay is done well, will ensure appropriate training of the teacher supervisors, set extended essay deadlines for students throughout the diploma program, and overall keep students and teacher supervisors on track with meeting deadlines, adhering to academic honesty policy, as well as course-specific criteria. In sum, the extended essay is the prime example in the diploma program of a piece of work in which the student has the opportunity to show expert knowledge, understanding, and enthusiasm about a topic of his or her choice. And now I'm going to go ahead and pass the mic back to Mr. Travatori.
Thank you. I would just like to close with my sincere gratitude towards all the stakeholders who have contributed to where we are now and, of course, where we would like to be, starting with, of course, this Board of Education. It's your vision, your support from inception to authorization to, of course, implementation in August. We, of course, truly are grateful for your support along the way. District office, of course, myriad of individuals who have worked tirelessly behind the scenes to propel us to the point that we are now. So we're also indebted to all of you for your support. Our faculty and staff, innumerable hours researching, creating course outlines, attending conferences all across the country, from Tahoe to Oklahoma to San Antonio, away from their families. and they are a very very special group of educators. And, of course, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention our students and also our parents. They committed to Edgewood High School, and they took a risk enrolling, and they invested into this process much as we have. And they've been very supportive along the way, and they've been instrumental throughout the authorization process as well. Our IB consultant that was assigned to us, she was an invaluable asset, shepherding us along the way. And our IB sister schools, what I mean by those are Bishop Amott. They opened the doors to us. We had professional development over there, Charter Oak. We went down to Newport Harbor High School. And, again, they've been instrumental in, again, guiding us through this process. So I'd be remiss if I didn't mention their contribution as well. Benefits of the IB program are numerous. The academic focus for the entire school really is IB, and we see this permeates in all levels, all courses, et cetera. We truly believe in equity and access, and we do not deny any kid the opportunity to pursue the IB full diploma or portions of it, essentially pursuing certificates in certain courses. But another thing I'd like to point out is the increased enrollment. As we know, we were losing kids in previous years to some of the other schools in our area that do offer IB, such as Bishop Amott, Charter Oak, Roland, Walnut, et cetera. So we're able to retain those students. Some also were electing to go to IPOLY. So I'm proud to report that in many conversations that my staff has had with these individuals, they've made the right choice to attend Edgewood High School and not leave the district. So it's really been a boon for recruiting. And as you know, we have choice in the district now where you can attend the other high school or you can attend Edgewood High School, and it's really what's a fit for you and for your family. And the other piece is inter-district, of course. So I'm stressing the retention aspect of it and recruiting, but, you know, it is a boon financially for the district because that is increased revenue. But it's, again, providing us the opportunity to enrich our district with the talent from surrounding communities. So I think that's another positive attribute. And lastly, you know, I want to commend the board and the superintendent and the vision of we offer a portfolio of programs here. If you look at the West Cove School, California, you know, the middle school, 6-8, or you can go 7-8 with Walnut Grove, the intermediate school. And true to that that vision, of course, now we have Edgewood High School, which has a unique focus and theme. So, again, my compliments to all of you for your vision and foresight into that because it truly does make West Covina Unified unique. And though we're a small district, our options are large. And I'd like to close with that. So if any questions about any aspects of the IB program, we welcome those.
First of all, I want to commend you. The school, you all have worked so incredibly hard and done an amazing job. I have friends, a number of friends, who have students that are there who are very happy and satisfied. And they speak very, very highly of all the staff, of all the different options the students have. They speak very highly of the accessibility of Mr. Travatori. So I want to commend all of you for the tireless work that you all do. I've heard from so many parents who say, does Mr. Zinski go home? They say they see her car first thing in the morning, and it's still there after activities have ended for the day when they're picking their children up. So incredibly impressed. So thanks again for all of your hard work. We really appreciate it, and I really appreciate hearing from parents and students alike saying how much they're enjoying their experience in high school. So thank you. Any questions from the board? Mr. Cox, Ms. Shoemaker, Ms. Poulos.
How many students that are in 10th grade now that are going to be going into 11th grade have expressed interest in receiving the IB diploma?
Approximately 70 students for full. I exaggerated. It's a big fish story. 60?
There'll be more by August.
Well, you know, there's the full diploma program, which all 60 are fully committed to that. And, again, there's other students, and that's why my numbers are bloated a little bit, who do want to kind of get into the program. In 11th grade year, they may start with just accessing a couple courses. We hope that expands their senior year. But 60 students that are going full-blown IB, and the intended outcome is to get that diploma.
It's a great opportunity for the students in our district, and I just appreciate all the work that has been put into it because I know it's beyond what the scope of work that you were doing, and then to choose to do this extra work was just beyond, and I know that the students are really going to appreciate it. And then, and for the students actually stepping up to the plate, 60 students that want to do that. Mm-hmm. So thank you.
30%.
What was that?
Statisticians out here said it's 30%. It constitutes 30% of our present enrollment. And of course, the kids we've recruited for next year from ninth grade, the numbers are about the same as far as them. And it's great that you see kids laddering over. We just checked in a kid from Walnut who had went in their pre-IB program, ninth and tenth grade, and wants to jump ship and come to our school. He was a San Jose Edison student who didn't make the right choice initially to come to our school and went to Walnut, and now is reconsidered and seeing the light. So we're happy that we're, again,
retaining and also attracting. That laptop. Mr. Spence.
Yeah, and while it's a district of choice, like we are now, too, so they were able to do that. But I guess I had a question, you know, when talking about some of these outcomes, some of the words that are used, you know, like internationally minded, how would you evaluate that kids are more internationally minded when they leave the IB program than, like, if they were at a regular school?
That's a great question, and it's almost a cliche, flags and food. You know, when we got our IB training, it's got to be more than that. So, you know, when you look at the curriculum.
Hey, food's fine. I'm not going to argue with that.
We're in China, and I hated to get on the plane and leave that. But all kidding aside, you know, how do you infuse that international mindedness into the curriculum? And I'll be honest with you, that's a challenge. You know, we've gone to these sister schools. We've asked them, how do you do this? So it's just, you know, when you're teaching a history class, you know, looking at multiple perspectives, different emphasis. You know, you can look at a biology course, for example, and you can look at the core curriculum of that. And how is that being applied in other countries? So it's really developing appreciation of different cultures and,
But how would you evaluate that?
That's
my question. I understand how you may try in lessons.
And to infuse
You know, I understand, you know, Marxist mathematicians or, you know, communist authors and all that stuff. I see, you know, and all that stuff. So the question would be, you know, how do you evaluate international mindedness?
Sure.
I mean, compared to, the real, and I'm not questioning whether the program's rigorous or anything like that. My question is, though, when you use words like that, how do you evaluate that's actually working compared to just, you know, anything else?
Well, I think it's exposure to the themes themselves. I think that's first and foremost because sometimes a student won't get that. To quantify that, I think, you know, that's your question. It's going to be very difficult.
How does the IB program quantify that?
Very difficult to do that. I mean, there'll be evidence along the way through discourse in class and discussions and whatnot, through the reflective writings, through the assessments that the IB program the CAS activities. So there'll be evidence along the way. I don't know if I could really quantify as far as student A leaving this school versus student B leaving that. I don't know if there's any true way to do that besides.
Well, I was in the World Atlas and newspapers being incorporated.
Yeah.
So that views from other countries.
So a lot of that's infused and embedded, but again, I appreciate your question. I don't know how you could quantify it so much.
How do you,
you know, because it's been around a long time. You know,
sure.
How does the IB program evaluate that actually occurs at a level? Now, I know we're going to be a little bit different because we're a school where people choose to be there, so there's probably a little more international mindedness already, you know, because people choose it. It's not a school that people are forced to go to because of their zip code. And so, you know, so that's a little bit different. I understand that. But, you know, I guess the question is, how do you quantify it? I mean, compared to other schools or just a regular curriculum, I guess, what's the evidence that the curriculum pays off that way?
It's a valid question, and like I acknowledged initially, that's the area that I think every school kind of struggles with, is trying to attain that result, essentially, because what you're asking is once that student leaves our school with a diploma, Western Unified NIB diploma, you know, what evidence is there that they have now developed that particular sense of international mindedness? So I'm ashamed to say I can't really answer that in a quantifiable way. But again, there's evidence of it along the way as far as infused in the curriculum.
Right.
But to measure that at the end, I don't know how you could do that. I really don't. Exit survey, something like that. I don't know. Sure.
You do a survey and they come in.
There are four parts to, because the language A, which is an English course, is a 2-year course. And there are four parts to it, 4 semesters. And you can teach those 4 semesters in any order you wish. And one of the semesters deals primarily, well, only with works in translation. And so that's one curricular way that you can expose students to global perspectives because they're reading 3 works from 3 different authors from 3 different parts of the world, which in most, 99% of American high schools, your junior year you get American Lit, and your senior year you get British Lit, with a smattering of world literature. So, as Mr. Trevattori was saying, it's interwoven naturally, certainly in the Language A course, but it's interwoven throughout the curriculum itself, and that's something that could certainly be quantified. And the History of the Americas course is not just an American history course. It comprises study of the United States, Canada, and Latin America as well.
Okay, yeah, I understand that. My question is, how do you show that? You said something, it could be quantified. Well, I know you can quantify that this is what you did in the lesson. I guess the question is, does that make a student more internationally minded compared to at another school? I mean, I don't know. Do we teach something called British Lit? Do we teach something called that? Is it called British Lit? I mean, I was an AP, I don't know, but
I don't think there is an assessment. I mean, if that's what you're asking for, I don't believe there is an assessment on international mindedness. I think it's just the core of the program, and it's interweaving and woven in everything that they do. But I don't know there's actually a test for that.
What I wanted to say that. In the assessments, in the various internal and external assessments, one of the things that the students have to demonstrate consistently is multiple perspectives. So in terms of actually the student output, that's something that they will have to be able to show. So in other words, there's, depending upon what angle you're coming from, that the student should be able to see an array of perspectives and speak to it, if that is the type of assessment it is, or actually write to that topic. So that would be one way that they would demonstrate their, acquisition of international mindedness, as opposed to just maybe from one perspective, they're actually writing and speaking of the multiple perspectives.
Okay, but I don't see how that would be different than a regular history class, because, I mean, when you look at the history classes, I don't know, even the history classes I went through, multiple perspectives was a big part of it. I mean, we'd break the classes up, and we'd have to work collaboratively. And we'd have, it's 18, 12, you're the North, you're the West, you're the South, you're Britain, and you had to develop those point of views. I mean, I wrote a paper on why the American Revolution was not justified. I mean, that's not necessarily something that I would, I think most people think that would be my position. It's not. But, I had to be able to discuss that and understand that point of view and why people would think that and why, people do that. And so, I mean, I was taking a very, you can do that. That stuff goes on in history classes now. So I guess I'm just trying to figure out, how do you evaluate that this is truly whatever we decide international mindedness is, making something different than a regular curricula. I mean, I understand it's different, but at the end result, that outcome, because that's what you say the outcomes are. So how do we evaluate that those were the outcomes, I guess is the question.
Sure.
I understand it's infused, but you listed a bunch of outcomes. I don't know if you have them that you can go over them real quick. How do you know those are the outcomes at the end that you want? That's my question. How do you know at the end that's what you got?
Well, I would say that in addition to history, because I think that course area really kind of lends itself to multiple perspectives. I would completely agree with that. But with the IB organization, what the guidelines are to ensure that that's occurring in the various course areas. So in addition to history, where that really does occur,
the earth is flat, the earth is round. You take those, or how does that work? Like that. That's how you do it in science.
Well, actually, speaking of science, I can think of, the environmental. There's a whole. I'm not the expert when it comes to our IB biology class. Mr. Bernard is, but for instance, taking into consideration environmental impact and things like that, those are areas that the IB is interested in when you're talking about multiple perspectives as well. So there's, when you talk about each course area, it's real specific as to how the multiple perspectives can be, what they're looking for, how they can actually be assessed.
But how do you know that's the outcome? I mean, when you listed, where are the outcomes? I guess maybe I'm not explaining myself, just tell me there isn't a way that we know it's working or something, but... because you talked about the internal external assessments, and where's what the outcomes you wanted? Or did you just say them out loud? I wrote down international mindedness, but
yeah, I mean we can research that and report back. But again, like I acknowledge, I don't think there's a way to quantify that in one measure.
one instrument. I just don't think there is, and I'm not aware of the IB program having developed something like that. We can research it to see.
Do you have that?
But I understand your question.
Yeah. Do you have that list of outcomes that you've read? They're not in the. They're not on the thing that you got.
No, I don't think we presented that.
Didn't you say something about outcomes?
Well, I think we talked about
the
school ESLRs. Yeah. Well, with each of those, sure.
Yeah.
But.
You know, how do you gauge that?
I know. Now you're talking about CAS. You didn't make it clear. I didn't understand that you were talking about CAS. These are the eight key learning outcomes for CAS. Increased awareness of their own strengths and areas for growth. Do you want me just to skip straight ahead?
No, go ahead. That's fine.
Okay. Increase their awareness of their own strengths and areas for growth.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, they're able to see themselves as individuals with various skills and abilities who can make choices regarding personal action. Because a student's CAS plan is crafted individually in conjunction with the coordinator mm-hmm. and approved by the coordinator.
Mm-hmm.
They must prove they've undertaken new challenges. A new challenge may be an unfamiliar activity or an extension to an existing one. For instance, if a student already takes piano lessons but has never studied composition before, they could study musical composition on the piano. The third is they planned and initiated activities, often in collaboration with others, like ongoing school activities in the local community or in small student-led activities. They've worked collaboratively with others, for example, team sports, playing music in an ensemble, etc. At least one project involving collaboration and the integration of at least two of creativity, action, and service is required. They must have, this is the fifth outcome, shown perseverance and commitment in their activities. At a minimum, this implies attending regularly and accepting a share of the responsibility for dealing with problems that arise during activities. The sixth key learning outcome is that the students have engaged with issues of global importance. Students may be involved in international projects, but there are many global issues that can be acted upon locally or nationally. For instance, poverty, or environmental concerns, or caring for the elderly. Number seven, they must have considered the ethical implications of their actions. Ethical decisions arise in almost any CAS activity. For example, problems and disputes can arise on the sports field, in relationships with others involved in service activities. Evidence of thinking about ethical issues and resolvement can be shown in various ways, including journal entries and conversations with CAS advisors. And the last key learning outcome is that they must have developed new skills. New skills may be shown via activities that the student has not previously undertaken or in increased expertise in an established area. So with regard to number six, being engaged with issues of global importance, and all of the key learning outcomes, all eight of the key learning outcomes must not be present in every CAS activity that a student mm-hmm. takes mm-hmm. part in.
Okay.
So at one point, at least during the process, they should have taken on one issue that deals with that has global importance.
Okay.
And so, I guess the way that you could quantify that is,
well, you can say, okay,
were
you
successful
activity.
In completing that activity?
I get that, and I understand, you know, that some of the fusion within the classes. But I guess if you can check with them if they have data on how they evaluate that. I just know, for example, on the ROP board for I don't know how many years we did it, 6, 7. University of California, Riverside, did a follow-up with the students who graduated from ROP, and we also had a group of people that had the same kind of profiles as far as, you know, GPAs and test scores and that kind of stuff that were not on ROP, and then they compared where they were employment-wise, where they were as far as further their education, where they were, you know, on all those kinds of things, you know, to try to see that there was a difference, and there was. There was a difference, you know, between kids that were involved in ROP as far as the level of employment, the amount of education they took, you know, that was quantifiable compared to the group that wasn't. And so I guess I'm trying to find out, okay, how does the IB program internationally assess that, you know, you're doing something that has a, not just a different program within the school, but a different outcome than what other high schools would normally have.
Outcome for student success.
Well, yeah, I mean, how do you know that
beyond
the IB student
school
is different than in the way they view the world than a high school student at a regular comprehensive high school.
Well, and the board may ask us to do, since this is a new program and they're just beginning the curriculum this year, I don't know that they can really answer it.
Well,
because
the IB program has been around a while, and that's why
Right. Hopefully
you can ask the IB program and they would have some kind of something.
But if the board would like us to look at the end of 2 years in this program and to build some kind of survey, we certainly could consider
well,
that.
I'd be happy. I love that. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I did have one more thing. But
okay. We'll come back. Let's just...
It's on that part. I think for me, in terms of students being internationally minded, you mentioned that the students are going to be reading newspapers from around the world. So, for example, last summer I was in London. The phone hacking scandal with News of the World and Rupert Murdoch was huge. It was all the news stations talked about. It was all the newspapers talked about. But when I came back to the U.S., it was a relatively minor story and still has never reached the level of the exposure in the U.K. And so I would expect to be able to talk to an IB student and quantify their international mindedness by the fact that going through the IB program, you're exposed to what's going on around the world. And so you will have either developed an interest and continue to pursue interest in what's going on around the world versus students in the non-IB programs would not necessarily have that same level of exposure and same ability to discuss the issues. And so, for me, that's what I think the IB program does. I don't know how you are going to be able to quantify it, because for me, the easiest way to do that is going to be one-on-one interaction with students. And I think the program is going to be different for other people.
Well, I mean, I just checked. I mean, it's been around a long time, so I'm hoping they've done some kind of quantification.
Yeah, I mean, I know what you're looking at is kind of some kind of longitudinal assessment from entry exit from, sure.
Yes,
and
something.
We can research that. I don't know if that exists. In my training, that was never.
I guess this thing, some of the knowledge, are IB students less likely to have to go to remedial classes in college than, other students admitted at university from regular high school? I mean, that would be something. I still don't understand how universities admit people that take remote classes, but since they do, is there a difference? I mean, I just want to see that there's some kind of difference, that justifies a lot of the expenditures on this. How do you ensure that different views are presented in all the different courses, that there's a diversity of opinions?
Well, I mean, that's going to be incumbent on the instructor, but through the internal assessments and the external assessments, that's embedded into those assessments. So, we have to, of course, measure growth throughout the year, culminating in essentially like benchmarks, culminating in the external assessment in the year. So you can see that.
And how do you quantify that they did get exposed and they understand all the different points of view?
Well, through the assessments, like I said, all the courses, what's different than AP is that there are internal assessments along the way,
right, yeah.
Not just that
all or nothing.
Culminating experience at the end, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And the IB evaluates the progress along the way as well, and they give us feedback, too.
Okay, well, I would appreciate you sharing some of that with us as it goes on. And then the last thing I had was the community service component you didn't talk about, right? You have a community service?
That's CAS.
That's CAS?
That's CAS.
So,
no.
But part of that's compulsory, right?
It's all 150 hours.
Yeah, okay. I guess I always struggle with how do you teach someone service if you're mandating that they have to do it? I mean, how do you teach people that that's a service if they have to do it?
Well, a number of our students are involved in scouting,
Okay.
Both Scouts and Girl Scouts.
And so they count things they're already doing, or they're counting new stuff?
They can absolutely double dip for something like scouting. Many of our students are involved in feeding the poor with their church groups. That would count, provided that they're feeding people and not proselytizing.
Okay. Okay, I don't know. What? I'm sorry, what? You mean they can do a religious-based food service program?
The activities must be secular in nature, but they can be performed in conjunction with a religious group.
And how would you sort that out?
Like I said, so if you were to use the example of the soup kitchen, so if you were to go and serve food to the homeless at a soup kitchen, you're feeding the poor. If you go and you serve food, and as part of your service activity, you're proselytizing or you're doing something of a religious nature, then that doesn't count. That portion of the activity would not count, but your hours serving food would.
Okay, so the motivation behind someone's service doesn't count, just the actual, right? That's what you're saying, right?
And the other piece, there's a lot of reflection along the way through the writings and whatnot, and it's not essentially just filling out a log 50 hours and getting a stamp.
Okay.
It's much more intense than that through vetting out the topic, vetting out the action, et cetera, and then the reflective components along the way. It should be a growth, a learning curve throughout that process.
Well, yeah, but I mean, I guess, again, the question is, okay, those are people that are already doing service, right?
Right.
You know, if you're already in Scouts, you're already in Scouts. If you're already, you know, in those programs doing that, but there's got to be a group of kids that aren't in it, right?
Right.
So how do you teach them that service is wonderful if you're a man in it and you got to do it and you better get it done by this deadline?
I think if many of us reflect back to our first experiences performing service in the community, it sometimes is something that our parents drag us and make us do. But once you do something, it feels good because you realize that you can make it an impact, and that we know that that's what service does for children. I wish I had the quote with me, but Dr. Robert Brooks is a professor at Harvard Medical School, and his work deals primarily with building resiliency in children. And he talks about one of the biggest ways to build resiliency in children is giving them opportunities to serve the community. Because when they see that they can actually, they see themselves as powerless, but when they see that they can do something that actually makes a difference, it empowers them, it makes them realize that they can achieve things far greater than they ever imagined. So those first one or two service activities might not come from the heart, but those experiences build, and I really think that they'll change students for the better.
And how do you evaluate that at the end then? Because it's been my experience that...
There's a past journal that goes along.
Well, there's a journal, but I mean, like, how would you view that that's different than people that did service, you know, that were participating in Scouts that went to a comprehensive high school? Or people that did it because they needed to go to college, you know, or people that did it, you know, obviously apparent, you're not judging the motivations behind it, but, you know, there are people that do community service, I hate to break the news, people that mm-hmm. you know, probably do it just so they can get into college,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, that are at a regular school. So how do you judge that you actually instilled service in people compared to what they would have otherwise?
Well, again, through the reflection component, I know when you just tag onto a resume to college that you've done 20 hours, you know, there's no reflection there. Again, I guess there'd have to be some kind of post-study to see where they are 5 years from that point to see if they're still engaging in benevolent endeavors. But again, that'd be a longitudinal type study, and I don't know if...
Because, I mean, I only know there's obviously several people I know that, you know, from high school. And, you know, we went to the original Edgerton High School. And, you know, I was involved with Scouts. And, you know, I'm still a merit badge counselor. Mm-hmm. Right? I still do merit badge stuff. And then, you know, there's another kid I know who, you know, he said, I just got to do this because I got to make sure I get in college. I don't think he does anything for anybody. Mm-hmm. You know, so, you know, okay, well, nothing's changed. And, you know, how do you judge that it actually had an impact, I guess?
I think it's the same as we teach literacy. We teach kids to read. How do we know if they're going to continue reading after, you know, they've committed?
We know they're going to continue to read, but we know they can read when they leave.
Sure, but are they going to develop their appreciation for literature and for self-growth, et cetera? We'd like them to, but we don't know.
But our goal is different. Our goal, mm-hmm. we don't say that we hope they'll be able to read 20 books a year. We say they're going to be able to read at this level when they graduate.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're going to say that you're developing and instilling community service in people, you know, that's your outcome. You have to find a way to quantify it, or else it's just mm-hmm. something that, you know, I know we try and we work hard, I mean, but that doesn't mean it's working. Mm-hmm. And I do need you to come and tell my 12-year-old daughter that she's powerless. But, you know, if you get the chance, you need to come tell my 12-year-old daughter that she's powerless, because she apparently thinks she has all the power. But that's, you know, it's just a different problem. Yeah, she's a liar. She's, yeah. And she might end up there, you know, so that's, I mean, I guess that's, find out what they can quantify as far as those outcomes, because, you know, they're nice, they sound great, they're not bad outcomes, and I know it's a rigorous program, but I want to see that it makes a difference.
Sure.
And then the only last thing is, I'll just say it again, I cannot believe the Spartan blue, it still bugs me. So there you go.
Point taken.
I just want to make a comment. My previous district They participated in IB for about 12 years, and some were into 7 years. Many community members had the same kinds of questions after kids had graduated, and they actually did a study in the district where they brought in an objective person who actually interviewed graduates, talked to graduates, and did quite an intensive study. That was a very positive study. Of course, the board determined what questions they wanted them to ask.
Did they compare it to others? Did they compare it to a regular comprehensive high school in the district?
Well, I think
similar kids.
No, I think they were more interested in kids who graduated with an IB diploma. What was their experiences in college and their success in college and years after? But that was what that board wanted at that time.
See, I want to see that it's worth the investment. That it does pay off with those things that we tell parents that it's going to do. You know, there has to be a way to quantify it. Or else you really don't have anything that you can judge, and you know that it works. It's just a feeling good about it.
Correct.
Okay, if there's no further questions, thank you so much, Mr. Trevattori. Thank you, staff, for being here. Thank you.
Thank you, Board of Education. Cabinet?
Okay. All righty, we're going to go ahead and declare a public hearing is hereby declared open at 8.05 p.m. for the purpose of hearing public comment on Tier 3 categorical funding. Is there any public comment? Okay, there being no further comment, the public hearing is thereby declared closed at, we'll call it 8.06. My watch happened to turn. Okay, for the board president's report, I want to commend and congratulate the high school. They did an extraordinary job at the graduation. It was exciting to see the students. And I was also, in addition to myself, the audience deeply moved by the tribute they paid to Mr. Trevattori, you're in front of me, Mr. Okura. It was beautiful, it was moving, it was touching, so I commend the staff for putting that together for Mr. Okura and his family. But that is my report. Mr. Cox, Ms. Shoemaker, Ms. Poulos, Mr. Smith.
The Coronado graduation, they had a young man who, against all odds, graduated. And it was just so touching to see how moved he was that he got to walk across that stage. And I think that's why we're here. And I know that staff put a lot of effort into him walking. And you could tell it made all the difference to him to be able to have made that accomplishment, overcoming so many obstacles. So that was wonderful. I also had the opportunity to go to Holland Crest, seeing the students promote and being excited to go into our high schools was exciting. And then Edge was people want to know how we can afford all of the doves and the fireworks. I had so many people asking me. But
the yellow roses.
It was a phenomenal couple weeks. The award ceremony at the high school. Seeing how many of our students had accomplished so much was phenomenal. And then I got to go to the talent show on the other end in our primary center and seeing those children just starting out and being so excited about school and showing. And I'm thinking, wow, where are they going to be? What awards are they going to be getting when they're graduating as seniors? So it was just a really exciting month. With all the activities, and I just appreciate all the extra effort that went into all of those.
Yeah. And to our own Megan, she got to instruct the class to move the tassels, so that was really good too. Okay, we're going to go ahead and move on to items from the floor, public comment. We have Mr. Jorge Marquez from the Office of Senator Dr. Ed Hernandez. So, hello. Mr. Hello there.
See him over there.
Evening. Board members, board president, staff, and the public. My name is Jorge Marquez with California State Senator Dr. Ed Hernandez, and I'm very excited to be here today and just hearing a lot of good news of what's happening in West Covina. Really makes me proud of living in this area. And I actually have I heard some good news that some of your schools have became distinguished schools and also received the Title I Academic Award, Achievement Award. So I actually have a few Senate resolutions to present to five of your elementary schools. So if I can, I'll read all the whereases Or actually, not all of them. That would be too much. So I'll just read a couple key points. Whereas the Californians desire few things more strongly than the opportunity to send their children to fine schools where they are encouraged to succeed and held to high standards of academic excellence. The California Department of Education's Title I Academic Achievement Award, or Distinguished School Award, was established to honor schools that have demonstrated excellence through evidence of high academic expectations for all students, visionary and collaborative leadership, implementation of state-adopted standards, a strong core curriculum, teaching strategies, and provide challenging learning experiences for all students. Learning support services for those with special needs supports student learning through family involvement and partnerships, and a learning environment that communicates the importance of education in our society. There's a lot more information, but I'll just read, resolved by Senator Edward P. Hernandez, OD, that he takes great pride in drawing special public attention to, and it says their school name, on its selection as a recipient of California Title I Academic Achievement Award or Distinguished School, et cetera, et cetera, signed on June 3rd of this year. So I just want to say congratulations, student. If I can have those principals that are here today, or representatives from Merced, San Jose, Monte Vista Elementary, I believe a West Cove, and Merlinda. So I have, okay, so I don't know which one's who.
That's Merced.
San Jose's having their promotion ceremonies tonight, so they're not able to attend.
They should have gone there and presented it.
Except for Merlinda.
Okay, great. West Cove Elementary School.
Congratulations. Yay!
Okay, great.
Well,
we have
someone
for San Jose as well. Congratulations.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you so much for everything that you've done.
Yay! Thank you so much.
Okay. Yes, and if there's anything else we can do for the staff, for the students, we're here at your service. Also, some of your high school students, maybe next year, if they're interested in interning at our office, let them know. We're more than willing to have them up, come on over, and maybe we'll take them in for the fall if they want to do it after school, or maybe during the summer next year. We're kind of booked right now, so.
Thank
anyways,
you.
Thank you very much.
The last one is for?
Oh, this is for San Jose.
Okay, Miss Taylor's going to take.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, she'll take them both.
Perfect.
Yes. Thank you. She'll be the district representative. Thank you so much, Mr. Marquez. Thank you. It was so good to have you.
Please tell the senator how much we enjoy being a district of choice.
Yes.
So please tell him that first.
Yes. Thank you so much. Okay, we are going to move over to our business session, organizational. Are there any items on consent that anybody would like to move off of consent? Mr. Spence, anything on consent to move off?
Anything on consent to move off?
Mm-hmm.
I did not have anything.
Or to add on? Nope. Phil? Ms. Poulos?
No.
Ms. Shoemaker?
Can we add 10?
Can we add 10? Can we add 10?
Yeah, I do need a copy of the history of the world, though, because I had a question about it, so I want to see it first.
We get you a copy of anything you want.
I know, it's small.
Okay.
It's like the one I read right before the AP test.
Okay, so we're moving 10 onto consent. Okay. Ms. Schumacher, anything else? Mr. Cox, anything to take off, put on?
Did we add that one on?
Added 10.
We added 10.
I'll second it.
Okay, thank you very much. It was moved by Mr. Steve Cox and seconded by Ms. Cami Poulos to approve the agenda and adding item 10 to consent for the regular meeting of June 12th, 2012. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed? Motion carries 5-0. Thank you. We will move on to item 7. Streaming video of Board of Education meetings. Item 10 has been moved to consent. Item 10 is all consent.
Good evening. How's everybody tonight? My name is Michael Willingham. I'm Director of Technology here for West Covina Unified. on behalf of the superintendent, I was asked to share information regarding online streaming of board meetings. I will present two options that I gathered information on. The first option being a cloud-hosted solution, hosted meaning that we'll stream our video feed to a paid outside service that will then allow the community to connect through hosted service to view the board meetings. To use this cloud solution, we would use our current audio setup along with the purchase of a video camera and streaming encoder. The cost of this would range from $9,000 to $12,000 for the hardware, with a $7,000 monthly subscription to allow for viewing and archiving. Another option I looked at was a district-hosted option, and this is where we host it on our own servers using our own bandwidth. There are some limitations on this, but it can be done. This would require the same hardware as the first option, plus an additional purchase of a video scaling server. This would allow the district to send multiple streams directly to the internet viewers, but with our current internet connection, we would only have the ability to serve 20 live streams. We would have to upgrade our current bandwidth connection to accommodate more viewers. If there was a high demand for any archive content, this could also have a negative impact on internet use during school hours. The cost of this would range from $30,000 for the hardware, and to accommodate more users, we'd be looking at an approximate cost of $25,000 per month to upgrade our internet connection. I'd be happy to continue researching other options if needed and report back to the board.
Well, we're not doing that one.
I figured. But is there any questions as far as this? Or?
Did you, just as a thought, I mean, I think we should do it, you know, find a way to do it as efficiently as possible. I mean, that was my position last time this came up. And, you know, obviously the first option is much not as expensive and probably actually easier, too, because you have an outside a vendor that's doing it. You're not stuck with as much, you know, stuff yourself. But discussions with the ROP about, you know, some of their technology classes and incorporating, you know, some of that maybe into some of it might be useful.
Okay. Can you put up the slide for the first one, please? So I can look at smaller numbers. Thank you.
There you go. So right here, what it's saying is we're going to use our current audio system along with a camcorder in the back of the room, and then we'll have a streaming encoder that blends those two streams together. And therefore, we'll send a single stream out to a hosted solution, and then all our community will connect to that hosted solution via a link to our webpage.
My understanding, the $700 a month depends on how many people actually view it, and that could change.
Correct. We can do it a little bit cheaper. It's the archiving that costs money. They sell you a package of so many viewing hours. So if we had like a highly viewed board meeting, it could actually cost the district more money. If we were just going to do a video stream of just the live video and that's it, no archiving of any sort, then we could probably look at a lower cost. But then, in a sense, what's the purpose? So
this would be in addition, is Mr. Spence, do I understand, are you suggesting this in addition to the audio or in place of the audio? In place of?
I would say in place of the audio, okay. Because you have the audio with the video, assume, right?
Right.
We don't have to match them up and be all like a bad, you know, foreign film or something like that.
we can still do both. It's two separate systems, so.
Okay.
Yeah, I know they're two different systems, but, you know, I don't see, you know, it seems redundant that we'd have the audio if you have the live stream video there. I mean, to me it does.
The biggest cost is the archiving of the video.
Right,
archiving.
Yeah.
That seems the biggest thing.
And so the cost is in retrieval. Is that what I'm understanding? What you said is if 5 or 6 people or 30 people are trying to retrieve it, then that goes up?
Correct. As this starts building, they bill you, let's say, ballpark $700 a month, and that's going to give you so many, let's say, 1,000 hours, viewing hours of some sort. So I believe it's a lot higher than that, but... And then, so if we go over that viewing hours, then it's like your cell phone minutes. You got to pay for per viewing hour upon that. So as our archive gets bigger and this gets more popular, the cost is gonna grow.
It's more popular.
Yeah.
Okay. The only reason I was asking is I know some people listen to our audio like to and from work and
still do that with
and the that was my question. Can we have them the same? Could we have them separate so that people can hear them?
We can do both.
Okay.
Yeah, at the same time, though. I mean, you can do both at the same time.
Yeah. It'd be completely, we keep it completely the same. We have it now where we put it up on our website. The audio doesn't use a lot of bandwidth, so therefore it really doesn't affect our network. But when we go to video, it's going to cause a lot of issues with our bandwidth, and then during the day could actually cause some issues and disrupt education. So that's the only downside as far as us hosting it. And then as far as the host service that you see there, it just costs. I mean, the biggest thing is trying to keep the cost under control.
Mr. Cox, did you have
questions? What's the benefit to the public?
The benefit to the public is they're able to be here at a board meeting and see us.
Live?
Yeah.
In person?
Correct. Okay. They would be seeing us just right now.
From their home?
Yeah.
Sit in their underwear, watch
If that's what they choose to do, then yes.
All right. And
we
so,
can't see them, though, right?
Yeah, no. And so the downside that they wouldn't get the live, but what do we have, virtually 24-hour turnover for the audio portion?
Usually it's posted by the next morning.
That's what I'm saying, so within 24 hours.
Correct.
We have it. So that's all we're getting is just live video versus that.
Correct, you know. And then as it's streaming the video, the encoder is also recording it, so therefore once it's done, it makes it available.
Yeah. And just my opinion, I think that right now, I mean, if we had unlimited funds, I think that'd be a great thing to do. It's probably important for the public, certain segment of the public, to have that availability. But a download of 24 hours at this kind of cost is unreasonable.
Okay. Thank you for your time.
Oh, I'm sorry. We haven't gone across the table. You're not done, sir. Ms. Shoemaker. Ms. Pelosi.
On the... the hoster, I've gone on to some live streams, mm-hmm. and people pay a nominal fee, but there's commercials. There wouldn't be commercials on there, would there?
No, there wouldn't be. That's why we're paying for it. I mean, we don't want our...
Unless we wanted to subsidize it that way.
It's usually either low cost or free services that they call ad-free. Everything I've researched is definitely ad-free. So we don't need to be sponsored by certain things. So.
All right. Well, it depends on the price.
Yeah.
Yeah. By Coca-Cola, I don't have a problem with that.
Yeah, but if it wasn't Coca-Cola and more so, then.
Big gulp.
Well, and the ones I've seen, you don't get a choice. Whoever purchased that time will pop up during the feed.
Right.
And sometimes it's not appropriate for what we would want in school. I wouldn't want a Viagra commercial
popping
up during the middle of the.
Correct, and that's
sorry,
why.
I didn't mean to
that's
say
a
it
very
that way.
Good
but they do in front of all kinds
and that was a great
kids
example.
No, I know. And that's why we pay for the premium service. That's what we're looking at. It is ad-free service we'd go after. So, but you're absolutely correct. On some of the lower-cost ones, there is they have to make the money up somehow.
Right. So. Okay. Ms. Shoemaker.
Do we know how many people listen to the audio of the meeting?
No, because we don't have a log of that. I mean, I could kind of maybe look at the bandwidth and give you an estimated count of that, but honestly, there's no counter of connection. It's just it's sitting on a website that's available.
I would guess it's nominal, and therefore it does not justify the cost of switching to live streaming and then watching it later. The audio is already there. It has nominal impact to the district. It's been working. You can go on, listen to old meetings at no cost to us.
Okay.
For me personally, I would like to see the option that Mr. Spence is suggesting of maybe getting ROP, and I'd like to hear from you approximately how many. I'm kind of leaning toward we can't make this investment right now. Mm-hmm. I'm agreeing with Mr. Cox that financially it would be a little irresponsible of us, but I'd like to see how much of the public is benefiting from what we're currently doing. So, and if we could do it in conjunction with ROP to provide students the opportunity to improve their workability skills before they go out.
Again, though, we don't have the bandwidth. So if we were having somebody to come in and tape it for us, we would have to have the bandwidth here to show it.
Gotcha.
So you're talking about that larger cost, even though we're having kids help us with it.
Right. But it's a one-time cost, if I'm understanding correctly.
Again, too, it's a fixed camera.
Monthly.
So.
No, the bandwidth
would
go up.
That monthly.
That would go up.
It was
the
other one is 25.
That's if we're hosting.
Right, but
this is, I'm not even considering that option. I'm looking at this option.
Right, but what would the ROP students be doing that would be different from this to save the cost?
No, maybe they're coming here and videotaping it even.
Videotape,
you know,
it?
Making a better videotape of it. I mean, is the idea we're going to have one camera up in the far left? Right?
They couldn't edit it.
Correct. It'd be a mounted camera somewhere with a wide-angle view that's going to be...
It just wouldn't be cheap.
You know, we're not going to start focusing in. And it's not going to be more. It's not going to be a production. It's just going to be more of like a stream.
You know, I kind of view this... I mean, obviously, you know, I had issues with the cable stuff, but not only because of the cost, but that it was actually limiting itself on who could get it. You know, because cable, when people were cable, people have dish, you know, they had, you know, people weren't getting it. They had, you know, just regular TV, whatever. And so, you know, we were investing a lot of money that only maybe, you know, one segment of the community can actually see. And actually, we also had the problem where our district was covered by two cable companies at the time. And so, you know, that becomes another issue. Mm-hmm. You know, obviously, the internet, you know, people can watch it on their phone. You know, people do whatever they want. I think seeing people sometimes makes it better than the audio. Because you see gestures, you see what's going on, rather than just, you know, hearing something, especially later, trying to remember what was going on, even when I've had to listen to them, you know, try to remember what was going on and where it's at in the program and stuff, you know, how long did this go. It's much easier, you know, to see that visually. And I think you can't compare, you know, 1990s technology and say, oh, well, no one's looking at the 1990s technology, you know, why should we upgrade to, you know, 21st century technology? You know, I think that, you know, it's kind of like a, you know, I think not a valid comparison. And then finally, you know, it's, to me, I view this kind of like the public records, you know, that to use, you know, what is it, 700 a month, so that's 12, right? So what, you know, $15,000 to say we can't provide the public access to us while we're here, you know, while they can't be here, that they can't have a chance to actually see a board meeting. You know, I think that comes before a lot of things that we spend money on. If we're going to be transparent and let people know what's going on.
Ms. Poulos, how about, where do you stand?
I would like to see what cuts we're going to make before we add on. I mean, this could be when Mike's saying, let's see where our money's going. We're going to have to be taking a hard look. So when we're doing that, we can think about, can we take on this cost? And if so, what else are we taking away? And I want
that's a fair. That's very, very fair. Okay.
That would be my recommendation.
We'll wait and see.
Okay. On this particular agenda, we have to have some contingency plans for whether or not the tax initiative goes through. So until we know that, I wouldn't recommend adding any additional costs until we're sure what's happening financially. But this was information you'd asked for.
Right,
so we put it
right,
on
and
the
we appreciate that. Thank you very much. Thank you for staying and waiting. Thank you.
Oh, thank you.
Thanks
and
for
I would
researching.
I'd like to agendize it, though, during the course of the budget things for a vote, so that we have the opportunity to have a vote on it.
Okay.
On whether or not we're going to do it.
Okay.
Do you want it on the next agenda?
When we do the budget stuff.
When we do the budget stuff.
Yeah, well, we said to do it in the context of the budget, so we can
next
it
year?
When we do the budget stuff. Yeah. Well, aren't we approving a budget soon?
Right, so that's the next agenda you're talking about.
Well, if that's our next, yeah, I guess it is, yeah.
Okay.
But I don't think we're going to be talking about the cuts then.
No.
It's going to be what's already presented.
Right.
I wanted to see it in context of what we were predicting
for next year.
Right.
Well, we already did that, though. We already did that at the last meeting. Didn't we?
What's on here, we have two contingency plans on here. So maybe why don't we finish this agenda and then the next agenda, we're actually bringing the budget for approval, and maybe after...
So on the next meeting, then,
next
I want
meeting.
An agenda.
You want agenda?
Yeah, because we're doing what Mrs. Polis asked now, but the contingency's here.
Okay. So you want to vote on it? You want it
yeah,
to be an actual recommendation to do it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Okay. On to item number...
You can take it out of the lawsuit money that will be gone by next year. So
okay. On to item number 22, okay, those budgets.
Either from what I could see 22
okay. Because we put item 10 on consent.
Okay.
So 22,
would you like to come up and answer questions? Basically, we have two contingency plans on here. As we shared last time, that Los Angeles County is asking districts to submit a contingency plan if the tax initiative does not pass. they're asking us to bring it to the board so we understand it. It doesn't mean that this contingency plan is what we are absolutely going to do. It just demonstrates to the county that we've had the conversation and we have a contingency plan in place. Unfortunately, what happens with the tax initiative, it happens in November, and if it doesn't pass, the districts would then, for us, it would be about $3.54 million that we would get less revenue than we had anticipated.
Allegedly.
Before he starts, you have to know, what is the county going to do with this information?
I think it has to do with understanding, based on this, would our budget be... help me out here.
Is this right. A mandate? Is this a mandate from them?
No, it's not a mandate. It's basically...
Okay. Let's not do it.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah,
I want their plan.
If it's going to be part of a propaganda program to get the tax passed, then, you know, we can, you know, let's just say what it is and let's just
give some number and let them go forward. What they're going to do at LA County if the taxing fails.
Well, I think if this is
something truly going to be a useful tool...
It will go in our budget. It will
I'm
go...
I'm sorry?
In the budget that we submit, this would be the contingency plan in our budget that would be stated in the budget.
Well, it doesn't match what we talked about at our board meeting, though.
These are two different ones. This one is if the tax initiative doesn't pass. The second one is what we talked about in the board meeting.
Yeah.
Ms. Poulos?
These need to be negotiated.
Yes.
So we don't even know if we could get agreement on this. I don't know why we would put that out there when we don't even know if it's doable.
Right. I mean, basically what the county is saying is we are basing our budgets based on the optimistic scenario, which is basically flat funding. The county wants the board to acknowledge that there is a chance that the initiative may not pass and we may have to take a hit of about $3.54 million. So, go ahead.
I'm sorry. Then why aren't we doing the proposed 23 on 22? Because that's something we actually discussed.
Right. These are two different scenarios. One,
but... regardless, we're putting something out to the county that says our contingency plan is reduction of 5 furlough days when the board made clear direction that under 23 is what we would be willing to do as a contingency.
23 we have to do no matter what. That's the $2.6 million.
But I don't understand why we have to propose two different things.
The way I see it is it's two different financial year, fiscal
years,
year.
Two different years, isn't it?
One is if the tax initiative does not pass, we will get less revenue in 12-13. The 23 is for the following fiscal year, which is 13-14, that we have a placeholder of about $2.65 million. So
I guess what I'd like you to look at, just so that maybe it's just to make you aware and then you can decide which way you want to go. We have the optimistic view, which we shared with you last time.
We need better optimists.
Well, that was the optimist. The conservative view would be that the second one, that the initiative does not pass and we choose not to do any furlough days and not to bring it to negotiations, and the money would just come out of our reserve. And if you look at year one, two, and three, you can see by year three, we would have used all of our fund balance and we would be actually not able to meet our commitments if we did not cut additional money. So I think it's really just to make you aware that if we did nothing, if the initiative didn't pass and we just decided we don't want to do anything, this is what we'd be looking at as a scenario for the district. If we decided on the next page to negotiate with the union for five, this is again if the tax initiative doesn't pass, if we decided to negotiate with the union for five furlough days, you would see at the end of the third year we would still make our 3% reserve. So it's really just making you aware of these two options, basically.
Yep.
Hold on a second, Mr. Spence. Ms. Bastin, did you want to add to Ms. Kaplan?
To try to clarify it, as Ms. Shoemaker said, item 23 is what the board discussed at the last meeting, what you directed us to build into the budget and the multi-year plan. So that's what you're confirming on 23. So these are kind of the wrong order here. 22 is what the LACO is asking in addition. If the initiative doesn't pass, and you'll be short this amount of money, the $441 per ADA, what would the board do? Again, it's kind of bringing to the board's attention, I think their intention, LACO's intention here, is to just ensure that all boards have kind of looked at this potential of losing this additional funding. So in addition to this $2.65 million in 23, we would have to cut another $3.5 million if the taxes didn't pass. And it's nothing that's tied in or confirmed, but they want to make sure the boards have seen the cash flow analysis where you would be with an ending reserves, ending fund balance, and if that would be within the economic amount we were required to have. And if it isn't, what would the board consider doing? And that just goes into the letter that goes to LACO, and you can say that we're still considering it and listing multiple items like we've done in previous years.
You know, but it's, in some ways it's foolish to say, what are we going to do? Because the first question is, well, what is the legislature doing first?
And it's,
you know, I mean, that's the real reality, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, so, you know, because if it fails, you know, then there'll have to be mid-year cuts of some nature, and that impacts the next year. I mean, the question isn't what we, you know, are both of these mandatory? Or are they,
Mr. Cox?
Yeah. Just 23 would be built into our budget.
Oh, okay. Well, that's fine, but.
I mean, it's just silly. I mean, it's just completely silly. They're going to, so we're going to have to come up with this so-called thing that we're going to do, and it's based on what the legislature may or may not do. Why don't we just say, no, we know exactly what the legislature is to do. It's going to fail. The tax initiative is going to fail. We'll just write this in the letter. You want to take this down, you can write, or listen to the tape tomorrow and you can do this.
tape tomorrow morning.
That would be better.
Yeah. The tax measure is going to fail. You're going to take money out of other items, other budgetary items that are of lower priority than education. You're going to fully fund education, and we are not going to have any impact on us whatsoever.
I'll vote for you.
You're
Thank
steal
you.
It from the city,
then,
steal it from the
but on the other, and that's so that's item number one. Item two is we'll tell you what we're willing to do when our employee associations are willing to tell us what they're willing to do. You know, I mean, Cammie, I think you said it perfectly. I mean, these are subject to, you know, we're making these gross exaggerations on obscure hypotheticals. It's just ludicrous. So. You know, so as soon as the legislature, Mike, tells us what they're going to do, and as soon as the associations confirm that that is what they want us to do, then we'll be happy to give them a contingency plan.
But I do want a copy of theirs.
Well, I feel very comfortable that we have a tape, that we discussed it, and we're aware of what the options are going to be. We're just providing to you what we were asked to do by the county.
I want to invite the president of the LACO board to come down here and explain their plan.
But your proposed actions are fundamentally wrong, too, because, again, now we're saying, well, rather than make real cuts, we're basically going to rob our children of time in the classroom.
Well, first of all, there is no option that I think is an appropriate option. What I'm saying is this is going to happen in the middle of a school year when we are not going to be able to make cuts to programs, and there's very few options we can do. We can use our fund balance. We can do that and not make any cuts at all. Or we can consider trying to negotiate something with the union in the middle of the year. That's all this is saying. You have two options. One is just let's use our fund balance and we'll worry about this following year and we'll make a zillion cuts the following year. That's okay, too. That could be what you recommend for us to do.
I don't know the answer, but this is wrong.
Is $59,000 or whatever, is that the total amount if we cut all of homeschool transportation?
No, it's a flood number. Just to add up to the total $2.65 million.
What they did is they quantified the two furlough days, the class size, and the freeze. Subtracted that from our goal of the 2.65, then that's just a plug. That's why we said other reductions, such as, because you couldn't just take that out of transportation. It's going to come from some various other places to be determined.
Yeah, because that number's in the wrong, that's all.
It's the pleasure of the board.
I move we table this.
Wow. Table it to bring back or just forget about it?
Okay, I move we defeat it and we oppose it.
Okay.
I do want a copy of their plan. I move that we request a copy of LACO's plan on how they're going to deal with the budget cuts should the tax initiative not pass.
Okay. I thought another question that we, or another scenario we wanted to see was, and was to see, did we say no 1% reduction? just simply what the things we have in front of us? I thought that was also.
I think what we were trying to, what we tried to capture in here, again, this is not the plan.
Right, it's
this
not the plan.
This is giving options that we are sending. I agree with all of you. We can't come up with these things. We haven't gone through the conversations. We haven't met with different groups, but we've got to show in our budget. Right now, it's in which one is it in?
Services.
Services. We have a certain amount. We're just trying to define possible areas that we would make the 2.6. Those conversations would really start at the very beginning of next year with our unions and with the board. But this was just trying to capture some of the options that we talked about last year. This is not specific. We're not held by it. It doesn't mean this is what we're going to do. So I agree with you. It's a little absurd to do this. We're just trying to comply with what the county co has asked us to do.
Right.
Just to clarify, what we've put into the schedules and the placeholder is what we are actually building into the budget and the multi-year plan. Item 22 here, the $3.5 million, isn't built at all. It would be part of a narrative in a letter. And we can choose not to do that and just say that the board is reserving this until we know fundamentally what the actual number would be, and then we'd have to negotiate it. We can word it in a professional way, in the direction that was given by the board.
We don't have to be that professional about it.
Yeah, I think from talking to the county, they just want the board to be aware of that there is this trigger which is in the horizon at 12:13.
You want to make us aware?
No, it's just the county, they issue the bulletin, they issue to all the school boards.
And so they want to make sure that I read their bulletins?
They want to make sure superintendents are bringing it to your attention so that we are sharing with you the reality of our fiscal realities for the next 3 years.
But if you didn't want to, you would just say you did and send a letter anyway.
Transparent.
I'll be happy to do that too. Just transparent.
Do what I do with them.
Okay.
Make paper airplanes or something.
If I have your direction, I'll be happy to do that, Mr. Cox.
Okay. So the furlough days need to be, of course, negotiated with the unions. Ms. Poulos, how do you feel? We have one for table it.
I definitely
two
table
for table
it. I don't think these are just throwing out numbers that we have no idea if we can even do this.
Well,
and these aren't my first choices.
And again, Cammie.
No, I know. So I'd rather just table it.
I'm agreeing with you guys. I think you know, if you know that what our governor is recommending, that if it doesn't, the tax initiative doesn't pass, that they're going to go down to 160 days. So they're really giving us, you know, no option but to do furlough days because many of the districts can't afford these kind of cuts anyhow. You know, do I think this might be a publicity issue so that we get angry, just like we are getting angry, and we go out there and get angry and say, pass those tax initiatives? It's probably a lot to do with that. But I'm comfortable with the direction of the board.
Okay. Jessica?
I'm fine with tabling it, but do we actually have to? Can we amend the motion to say we are sending a letter, a professional letter that says you tell us what you're doing and we'll tell you what we're doing?
Yes, you could, and we would.
Or we want to invite the board president to come out here and present what LACO is going to do. Mm-hmm. Since they're an important part of our financial accountability team and special ed, we want to know what they're doing.
Stakeholders.
One of our stakeholders.
And
please
that we
explain
want to make
what
all
you will
stakeholders.
Do to the, please explain what you will do to the superintendent if she doesn't tell us
but
what's going
on.
If she does not share the bulletin with the board and make us clear that we need to develop a contingency plan?
I want the board president to come. I know who the board president is. It would be fun.
Okay, so I'm hearing that there's a general.
I'm going to jail. I'm okay.
There's a general consensus to table it because, number one, some of these things have to be negotiated with the unions, so we don't even know what we can or can't do at this point. And number two, we don't know what's happening with the taxes. And number three, this is not the top choices by some of the board members. Am I hearing that correctly? Am I summarizing that correctly? Okay. Then we will go ahead and table this.
Table it, not to bring it back.
Table number 23 and table number
22. Do both?
Sorry.
You can't do
sorry.
Both.
Sorry. Table number 22. I apologize. Table number 22. Okay. Item number 23. Table to not bring back.
And again, in 23, we tried to capture some of the things. Again, it's not an inclusive list. It's just
we
tried to capture some of the conversation we had, knowing that there wasn't complete agreement.
This is direction of the board from the last board meeting?
Some of it did.
Well, there wasn't consensus at the last board meetings, and we tried to take what we heard. And
so this is just a showing that if we should do this, then this is approximately what the savings are going to be?
Yes.
So it's not
what our reductions would be.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, but the transportation was
there were also a couple of board members who, as Ms. Eileen Miranda Jimenez mentioned, proposed that instead of the home-to-school transportation, that we seriously look at the reduction of salaries.
Yeah, the 1%, 2%.
Other than doing that? You mean, or in addition to doing that?
I think it was in addition to. Mm-hmm. Yes. Okay. Thank you, Ms. Schumacher. So.
Good. I think that's an excellent recommendation. And that, again, I do think that anything, we may not be able to avoid it. I do recognize that. But, you know, when we're talking furlough days and class size reductions, we're directly implementing or directly impacting children. When they sent, when they started funding us through, instead of, you know, the attendance, the semi-annual attendance, it's butts in the chairs, as they say, and so we're reducing that number. And
these
and
two furlough days,
yeah,
where kids were actually already home. These were
staff development days. Okay, because mm-hmm. I thought I'd read someplace where it would be during the work week. So no. You're characterizing that as during work week time?
It would yeah. be for teachers. Yeah.
These two no. days were
I see.
Specifically
three days.
Okay.
Non-student days already.
Yeah.
Right. Ms. Kaplan, only because I'm living through this just right now, and I was very much against the furlough and filling, like, only the staff development days, but my children took blankets and pillows to school today to watch videos all day.
Yeah, don't get me started on that.
All day. And tomorrow is nothing but party, which is wonderful. However, I said, well, wait, why couldn't those be furlough days at the very end? So how far, I know 80, eight, right, mm-hmm. right. And it's really been very lax ever since testing happened. Mm-hmm. So I know it's 80% of the school year has to happen before we can test.
We actually looked at that.
How
Ellie, do you
far
want to share what we
can
at?
We push that? Because after we test, everyone kind of drops off.
And then it now can back up 12 days before that or 12 days after that. That's been changed recently, but that's the way it stands currently, and I expect it to be that way for next year. I think most schools, whenever possible, try to push their individual testing window as far as
okay, because after carrying the pillow and blanket to school for my children, I said, okay, these would be good furlough days. Because there's absolutely no instruction taking place. So, again, this is just where my children are at school. I don't know what's happening in the other schools in the district. We do have some educators who can tell me, are they showing videos? and I won't put anybody on the spot. There you go. So that's another possibility. Could we push as much as we can and
absolutely.
Take the furlough from the end?
We can do any and all that.
Okay.
And I don't think we're really, honestly, at a place where we're really ready to say to you, this is what we recommend. We do know that we need to cut $2.6 million out of the budget. And there isn't a magic bullet. There's not one area to take it from. There's not one of these things that we recommend. But we know we're facing some really hard times and are going to have to make some decisions. So it's really the beginning of the conversation, not the end of the conversation. This is really what's going to take place the entire year next year as we start building our budget for next year. Hopefully that the tax initiatives pass. We're not going to have to address it.
Right.
In terms of the additional funding that we would lose.
Thank you. I'm simply now stating that I'm more open to furlough days taken from the end. I had a different position until I lived through it this week. So I'm more open to that.
Will,
go ahead. Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Cox, and then I'll go to Ms. Poulos.
I was just going to move the item. But
okay.
Well, I just, I thought that as a board, we have discussed this issue, not for the school your child attended, but for all of our schools, and that there was going to be a limited number of movie days, and if they had a movie, it needed to be built into the curriculum sometimes, and that the end of the school year was supposed to be as productive.
Right. Is our movie policy not being followed?
No.
No, no,
honestly, our kids are out, so this our kids are in right now,
kids
so
are
whatever
gone.
Your experience is not...
Right, and it very well may be that last week was a very loose week in the schools, you know. The seniors were done a week before Friday.
But I can't tell you.
Right.
I know that my nephew was out, he was a senior, but my niece was doing work until the last day. Mm-hmm. Now, the last day was turning in their books and doing some other things, but even my nephew had a project that he had to get in on that one week that he was out. So
Tori, do you want to talk to it? You're only principal here right now.
Well, yeah, the high school level, we have finals, and the last 3 days of school are
finals.
Days. It's final schedule.
Okay.
So I can attest the fact that assignments were being turned in on the day of finals, papers, you name it. But
instruction on Monday and Tuesday.
Exactly. We had a cram session Monday night in preparation where my entire faculty was there to support students from 5 to 9 p.m.
And
so
your middle school?
We were very active the last week.
Down to the...
The middle school level, we'll have benchmarks administered as well. And so those are accompanying experience for the board. I'm not elementary, but so I can't...
Speak to that.
...attest to what happens there if I was the
board. Okay.
Can I move this item?
Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you for the information. Mr. Cox is moving it. Seconded by? Seconded by?
I'll second it.
To consider the proposed budget reductions, revisions, revenue enhancement, realignment of priorities, and implementation of other measures designed to safeguard the district's fiscal health. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Okay, it carries 5-0. Okay. That takes us to the end. We have to go into closed session. We have completed our public agenda, so we are moving into closed session. Thank you. Before we do that, dates to remember, June 26th is the next Board of Education meeting. Any other items to discuss publicly? Any discussion? Okay, thank you.
Other thing I have is over a month ago, I asked to have a bullying policy developed and brought before us, and I would just like to know the status of that.
We've actually been trying to get some copies of policies from the School Boards Association, and we will have that. I don't know if it'll be at the next meeting, but we are working on that.
We allow bullying?
No, we don't allow bullying, but there are some really much better policies than what we have, and that's in the works right now. Haven't forgotten it.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, everyone.